everybody. Welcome to this edition of The Meisterpiece. I am your host, Susie Meister, and I am super excited about this episode. I have been dying to talk to my guest for so long. He's the star of A&E's Hoarders. He's an extreme cleaning specialist, an entrepreneur, and the so-called clutter cleaner. And rumor has it he had a crush on me back in my Road Rules days. So please welcome my guest, Matt Paxton. Matt Paxton, thank you so much for coming. I can't believe I'm finally talking to you.
I know. It's been a long time coming. I'm excited to be here.
How is this real?
I don't know, man. You were my big teenage crush. I'm pretty excited that I'm finally talking to you.
I know. What if all my questions were just like, so when did you first know that you loved me?
Exactly. It was in college. I can tell you that right now.
That was many moons ago, but that I was on my show back when there wasn't even any Survivor or anything. So now
you guys were it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys were it, really.
It was just like us and Cops. You know that show Cops?
Oh, yes. I have a really good Cops story.
Of course you do.
Can I tell it?
Were you on it?
Yeah, it's a great story.
Tell
one of
me.
Our, one of our sound guys, to get back to the sound guy talk, one of our sound guys from Hoarders from season two, we were all in New Mexico. And what, like, I didn't know back then, like 90% of Cops is filmed in New Mexico.
No.
They just don't care. And they have like no laws whatsoever. But we were just doing a Hoarders in New Mexico. And this was at the beginning of Hoarders. So like none of us knew anything about TV. We didn't know anything about safety. Like we would just walk into these houses with like a paper mask.
Oh God.
Like it was just very casual. And it was just me and my guys cleaning up houses. And they would just film us. And that was it. So it was like a mini documentary. And it was really cool. We had no therapist, nothing.
Whoa.
And one night, all the camera guys and all the sound guys, we all got for beers. And we're driving down the street, and this cop pulls us over. And most of us have had a few beers, I'm not going to lie. The guy driving was totally sober. And the cop starts kind of harassing us and getting at us, and I'm a little nervous because this is, you know, my job at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm just hoping not to lose my job. Well, the sound guy in the back starts mouthing off to the cop.
Oh, God.
And he's like, can I cuss on this or not? I don't know.
No, yeah, yeah.
Okay. He's like, fuck you, man. Leave us alone. And he starts yelling at the cop. We're like, dude, shut the fuck up, man. You know? What are you doing? And he just won't stop. And it's a kind of a new sound guy for us. We're not used to him yet. And we'd only had two sound guys total, for the whole two seasons.
Right.
And then we have this new guy, and he's harassing the cop. And we're like,
what are you doing?
Up,
right.
So he goes, get out of the car. And he pulls the sound guy out, throws him against the hood. The guy takes off. The sound guy starts running.
No!
And we're like, holy shit. Cop pulls his gun. We're like, oh, my God. It's like 10 o'clock at night. We're like, we're
it's getting real.
This is getting very real. He pulls the gun, and we're like, oh, my God. And then all of a sudden, someone knocks on the back window, and it's our buddy. This guy had worked on Cops with all these cops. And
no.
He pranked you? Totally pranked us. We all fell for it. And it was just him, the cop guy, just totally fucking with us.
I would have had a heart attack.
I'm sure I pissed myself. Like, I was so scared.
That's awful.
My God. He was dying laughing. The cop ended up being off duty. He ended up going to get beers with us.
Oh, thank God. That could have been ugly.
Thank God. But, oh, my God, it could have been the end of Hoarders.
Yeah. That's awful. I don't appreciate pranks, Matt.
Good ones, man. I don't think I've had a better one than that played against
That's
me, man.
Pretty good. But was anyone filming that? That's something I'd like to see.
No. God, it
Dang.
Would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But, like, I'm a part of that sort of, like, old school reality thing. But you're kind of, like, the new school.
I'll tell you, we're wide open. Like, we literally, we just pretty, 99% of the time, they still just film us doing our job.
For real.
Which is awesome. And I'm learning, like, the more pilots I shoot, that's
yeah.
not the case. I didn't know that
no.
before. I didn't realize the majority of reality is fake and scripted.
Right.
And, like, I had no idea. I had no idea. And now when I found that out, it's ruined TV for me across the board. My wife and I love The Bachelor. The Bachelor. I love it. It's so cheesy. It's so just lame. And we love it. And, like, and then I was like, oh, I was like, it's so romantic. Look, they're making out in the ocean. I'm like, honey, there is like four sound guys. There's like five cameras on them. Like, that dude couldn't even get a boner because he would knock somebody over. You know, like, there's so many people. And now I'll, like, see, like, that's a great example of that shot. Like, you'll see where the sound guy has walked out of the ocean because
yeah.
he's been standing there with a boom. And so you'll see the footprints of, like, leg marks of where the sound guy was.
I know. It ruins television. But you guys seem
legit. I'm always
looking
for a mic pack. I think we are. I mean, we definitely a key ingredient for any reality TV is drama. Like, if you don't have the drama, it's going to fail. It doesn't matter. All these great shows have tried to just be positive, but as people, we don't want to watch positive stuff, unfortunately. It is what it is.
Yeah.
So you got to have drama. The good thing with Hoarders is there's no lack for drama. You don't have to create anything. Like, it just happens. And it's funny because our producers, it's hard. The experts, like me and the therapist, we're there to help the hoarder, period.
Absolutely.
That's our job.
Yeah.
But our best friends, our buddies, are the sound guys and the camera guys and the producers, and their job is to create a TV show.
Yeah.
And we're creating a TV show about a mental illness.
Yeah.
So sometimes there's a conflict. Like, I'll look at, like, if I was to get married now, one of these producers, most of the producers and camera guys would be the guys at my wedding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because you're on the road with them, as you know. And you get so close to him, but then, like, I'll look at the guy, and I'm like, he's trying to set something up.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to make sure that there'll be some drama. And I'm always like, you don't need to set it up. Just let it happen.
Yeah.
And so we always have that little bit of a conflict but most of the time, man, and it's funny, what airs is always totally straightforward.
Yeah,
like,
the
natural,
real deal.
That's what happened. Because the family is angry and upset,
yeah.
And the hoarder is confused. And so when you have two family members that don't see things eye to eye, you're always going to have legitimate, real emotion.
Well, and that can happen on, you know, a small scale, just with your own family, about dumb stuff. Little things make you mad about, like, your mom. And
exactly.
So imagine when you multiply it by mental illness and then all this stuff, a lot of which is gross to healthy people. And that's, going to create drama.
Yeah, you kind of get that Biggest Loser mentality. You know, you watch it to make it feel better about yourself. Like, we get that. And that's probably 80% of our viewers just do it to snark and to just say, oh, well, I'm not that bad.
Well,
and
every episode, I swear, every time I watch, I'm like, oh, my gosh, this one's the worst one yet. Every time. But
yeah, they ramped it. I called it Hoarders All-Stars this season.
Because
I mean,
you had to stay overnight.
Oh, the spend of the night and then – every week, like, it would, I'd be like, okay. I mean, like, twice this season, I've had to go to therapy afterwards.
No.
It was so fucked up.
Why? Because you felt sad?
Yeah. I mean, it just, in some of the images that, like, you have to get out. I mean, they, people don't realize, like, how messed up some of these houses we go into are. And they don't air the worst. I mean, I'd probably say 80% of what we shoot, they can't air.
Why?
Because it's so offensive and so depressing and sad. I mean, like, I had this liquid cat episode a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw.
Where I was just pulling liquid cats out of the fridge.
Yeah.
Well, there was 2 whole days of cleaning that they didn't air.
Whoa.
And I mean, I was like bobbing for apples. Like, it was literally a big ass cooler on the back porch filled with black cat juice. And I was just pulling, I had to just stick my hands down into this like 3 feet of abyss and pull out cat carcasses, like,
no.
One after another. It was awful.
And it affects your soul?
I don't like animals anymore. I have to totally block out animals. Like, I just focus on, my job is to focus on the person. Period.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
I have to totally find the best in this hoarder, no matter what, because no one else is looking out for the hoarder.
Whoa.
So, like, if they're this horrible, mean, nasty person, I have to remember there's a reason. They're a good person deep down inside, and something bad's happened to them. And so I'm always searching for the good in that person. And it gets hard after, like, 4 hours straight of picking up black cats, or even harder for me now, I have young children. When I started this job, I had no kids.
Yeah.
But now I've got 2 young babies. And so, like, when I see a child being mistreated, like, then I really, it's very hard for me to still be on the hoarder side.
Yeah.
But, like, I have to. I mean, they've also learned they don't put me with kids anymore because they know I'm not going to be able to handle it very well.
Whoa.
Like, Dr. Zazio has a really hard time with the animals because she's such a big animal lover. So they started to pull her away from the animal ones because it's hard for her to stay professional. I mean, it's intense, man. I got attacked by these crack addicts this year, the family, all the kids.
I didn't see
this. Oh, yes. That's the big one, man. I ended up having to have a police escort out of town, man. The family didn't tell us, like, how they told us that they had done time. They were very upfront about their criminal past. We were fine, but they all told us they were sober, and we took them for their word. And, like, we realized halfway through it, I'd say an hour into the cleanup, we realized we had totally been taken.
No.
And the network had been, it went through so, for us to, there's probably 1,000 families that don't get helped for every one family that we do help.
Come on.
It's a very long list. I have thousands of people that need our help, literally thousands.
And what do you think is driving this? That's what I don't get.
Oh, it's always been, it's just depression. It's just, just like any other, like alcoholism and drug addiction, they're very cool addictions. They're very accepted. They're old school. Like, people are fine with it. You say your buddy's a recovering alcoholic, and you say, oh, good for him. Like, and there's no judgment. But like a hoarder, you're like, oh, what a freak. What a weird person.
Well, why though, right?
I get what?
You get why there's that judgment. Because it devolves into poop.
Yeah.
That's why. If it were just stuff.
Yeah, when you're sitting in the corner of your living room day after day after day, that's a great example. I always tell people, don't think about the 300th bag of diapers. Like, think of the first bag of diapers. Like, you got to think of, like, how mentally sad that situation was for them to be like, yeah, I'm going to take a shit in the corner just this one time. And next time, I'll clean it up later. Like, always think about, like, I have some really bad. I got into this business because I was a gambling addict, and I lost everything when I was 25. Like,
no.
I just totally start over. Oh, yeah, I had my ass kicked by a bookie. Like, I lived at Caesar's Palace Casinos in Lake Tahoe. And I lived on the 7th floor at Caesar's Palace and got into some major trouble, lost my job. I actually worked for the casino, lost my job. And I remember every night I would justify it. I'd be like, okay, I'm just going to gamble $100 tonight.
Yeah.
You know, and then by the end, it was like, okay, I'm going to gamble my girlfriend's paycheck, but I will win enough so I can put enough money back in her account tomorrow, so she won't even notice. And then I guess more I'd lie to myself, be like, okay, well, if I steal a little bit of money from work, they won't know. And I never did that, but like, I started to justify that.
But
and
I mean, okay, whenever
it grows slowly. Like, the first time I did that, I totally knew it was wrong. By the end of the summer, I literally was thinking about like prostituting myself just to cover my debts, because it was like, okay, like,
it spiraled.
You don't care. It spirals. And so the hoarder's the same way. So that's why I really work well with hoarders, because, I almost suck dick for my problems, So, like, I totally get pooping in the corner. Like, that's
But here's the thing. When people think about addiction, like alcohol or drugs or even gambling, they can relate on some level because they can understand wanting a high. The hoarding is more difficult, particularly with regards to the poop, because people don't understand what is attractive in any way about that. It only seems
great,
like a bad.
You just asked me an awesome question. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
There is a high. A therapist is going to tell you that it's a disorder. It's not an addiction. But what's going on is they are self-worth is their high. So like, if you are getting hammered to get high, we're trying to feel better about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening. Hoarders the same way. They're so depressed. They're so sad. There's so many tragedies in their life that they're grabbing at straws for that mental self-worth. And so they need it. So, like, lots of times it starts with, like, crafting supplies. So they'll say, all right, I'm going to make a blanket for Tommy because Tommy had a baby girl this week.
Okay.
So it's a granddaughter.
Like, good intention.
It's a good in all. I would say 99% of the time, hoarding starts with good intention.
Yeah.
Almost, because it's never stuff for them. It's always stuff for someone they know. And so, like, you follow the blankets. I was, okay, Tommy had a baby. I'm going to make him a baby blanket. And he loves blues. I'm going to go to the store. They go to the store. They're like, all right, I'm going to buy, it only takes me 10 things of yarn, but I'm going to buy 20 because they're on sale, and I'll make another blanket for someone else. So right there, they're making themselves feel good about the blanket for Tommy, and then they're also making themselves feel good about this fake, fictitious blanket for someone that doesn't even exist yet.
Yeah.
And the first time they do it, they totally make the blanket. It's awesome. They give it to the kid, and they get their self-worth. The family's thankful, and they get self-worth. Everything is great.
Okay.
But what happens is each time they do that, a little less gets done at the end. And so now they're just buying the yarn, doing half a blanket. And then in their mind, they give the blanket away, and everybody's happy, and they feel good. But by the end, they're literally just buying the yarn.
Yeah.
But they're giving themselves the self-worth. So they still get that high. It's that search for self-worth. And I think we all relate to that. I mean, there's no one that doesn't like to feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
And they just are so locked and so depressed that self-worth comes from a really dark place.
Wow. That's intense.
I can get deep, man. I mean, it's nasty. It's really sad. It's really tragic. And like, when you hear the stories, like, we'll be there for 5 to 6 days. So I'll spend 100+ hours with the hoarder. But yeah, you guys only see 21 minutes on the
right.
TV show.
Yeah.
So like I'm really close. Like they're my family by the end of the week. I mean, I actually don't, like, I totally remove myself from my family when I'm with a hoarder. I am 100% committed
present
to that family.
In the moment.
And I only speak to that family. Yes, I'll speak with the crew at night, but like when I'm on the hoard or with that family, everyone else is oblivious to me. Like, that's it. So I'm really close to those. And some professionals don't like that route. They actually try to keep a distance,
yeah.
I don't. I'm old school. Like, I just try to relate to them and get them to totally take me into their world, because if I can do that, then they'll totally, most of the time I can get them to actually visit with a therapist and get the help. Because the reality is there's a tragic, tragic thing that happened to them. And if you figure out what that trigger is, then you have to treat the trigger. It's never about the stuff. Every week, I'm like, I've seen it all. There's nothing that can.
Yeah, that's how it feels as a viewer. Like, okay, that's it. We're done. They can't make any more of these because and then next week you're like, what?
But yeah, I thought we were done last year. I was like, we're done. There's no way we'll get a season six.
You know?
And season six is by far the best season we've ever done.
You know, when I thought you were done was the one where the woman's plumbing. What? I don't understand why the plumbing always breaks, but her plumbing broke and she continued to go number two in the toilet and it created like a tower of BM.
Call that, yes, that is called Poop Mountain. And if you search on Twitter, it's hashtag Poop Mountain. You'll see lots of cool pictures that we post. That place, that thing, it was actually taller than she was. So she clearly had to stand on something to keep that pile going.
When I saw Poop Mountain and like the hazmat people like chiseling away at it,
yeah,
I just thought, we're done. There's nothing we can do now.
I would love to go back to just doing Poop Mountain. Like, that would be so easy. I mean, you have to laugh. Like, and we use very dark humor to get through the stuff that we see. Like, you can't not. If you don't laugh, you're going to go crazy. Because it's just so extreme. And the hoarders, it's actually a very funny process. Like, the hoarder, one of our things is we have to get the hoarder to laugh again and let them to have fun again and have, like, a family again.
Yeah.
And that's a majority of what they cut out. And well, so, like, I mean, we do a lot of pranks where, like, the hoarder is part of the prank, and they're playing a prank on one of the crew members. And, like, we always love to have the hoarder tell the sound guy that she's dropped one of her packs in a pile of poop or between a bunch of cats or something. Because those things are expensive, and sound guys are very particular about their equipment. And it never fails. It's always hilarious. And the hoarder, you see the hoarder smile, and you see them realize they're a part of something for the first time in a long time.
Well, that's nice. It's nice that that happens, but whenever I see that as a viewer, I'm always like, oh no, pretty soon there's going to be typing on the screen, and it'll tell me that that was a false high, and they've made a really startling discovery.
Disturbing discovery. Yes,
in the fridge or whatever.
The disturbing discovery is always awful. I mean, there's no way to candy coat my job. My job is awful. What I find is horrendous.
Yeah.
But what you see the hoarder, the transformation of the hoarder is what is so cool about my job. I actually see miracles happen. Like, I use that word. I don't throw that word around lightly. Like, I truly believe they're miracles. Like, I will see a woman that has literally been raped, beat up by. I mean, I had one lady that, and this is a horrible way to say this, but I have to say it to express how sad her life was. She had been raped by her father and her brother her entire life.
Oh.
And then her brother said she got too fat, so he wouldn't rape her anymore. Whoa. And she started missing that because that was the only attention she got. Okay. Horrific. I mean, to even say that out loud is horrible. And I apologize to your listeners because it's an awful thing. But that's the reality of the things people will say to us during the day. And by the end of a 2-month process with therapy at the beginning, very good therapy from Dr. Green during the process, and then an extensive, I mean, some of these people get 6 months of therapy on the back end.
Thank God.
And for her to actually, and this lady she was just crapping all over her house, like everywhere. And I actually found my book. This is the first time I ever found my book in the house.
I heard that.
And she had taken a shit on top of my book. It was hilarious to all of us. When she realized she was like, "Oh, that's a great book. You should read that book." And she didn't know I had written it.
Oh my God!
And when she realized she had shit on my book, it was so funny. But to see her start from this horrific trauma to now she's living on her own, I mean, she's not dating yet or anything, but she has real friendships, and she has pride, and she has self-worth again. And, like, she can hold her head up and go to a job and, like, actually provide for herself. And that's an amazing thing.
That
I mean,
is.
To see this woman, like, actually be able to look a man. I mean, like, this woman couldn't even look me in the face because I was a man.
Oh.
And now she'll give me a big bear hug.
Yeah.
And, like, that is an amazing thing to see the transformation. And it tends to be more – I tend to work with female clients better and because there's not a lot of pride associated with, you know, hoarders. Male hoarders are really difficult because the pride and the ego is so bad. But I just love to see these women find themselves and, like, believe in themselves. And their transformation is just absolutely short of a miracle. I mean, it's amazing. And I don't want to get into faith, but, I mean, for me, faith is a large part of my process. And these women have to first have faith in themselves, and then they have, you know, faith in whatever spirit they believe in. But it's so cool to just, from a start to, it's a very linear process, and it may take a couple years. But then it's very contagious when you see the family be so proud of it. You see this hoarder, like, you every time you'll see the hoarder. And unfortunately, this never really shows well on a half-hour TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see this hoarder take a chance. Like, they will be literally at two roads, you know, divided. And they've got to either continue to quit, or they've got to push themselves past their comfort zone, and they've got to try. And that risk is really big. Like, they're jumping off a cliff. They're either quitting again for the thousandth time, which it's easier to quit. Every time you quit, it gets easier. And so they've been quitting for 10, 15 years. And we get them to a point where they're either going to have to quit again, or they have to really dig down deep and try. And when you see them take the harder road, which is the trying, the effort, and they do it, they actually do it, and then you see them be rewarded for it. Their family is so excited, and they you know, they'll get their house back, or they'll get their kids back. They'll something good. They'll be rewarded for taking that chance.
Yeah.
And then you see them just totally go for it, and their lives completely change. And that is, like, the coolest thing in the world. That's so much. I mean, that's like, I mean, it's just amazing.
And
I mean,
what percentage of your clients would you say have that kind of transformation?
I can get pretty. I'd say 90% of my clients, we get them to that point.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
The staying on the clean side, don't stick to that number 90%.
What would you say?
What happens is it that stay clean and actually stay on the path to bettering their lives is probably closer to 50.
Yeah.
Because what they have to do is they have to continue every day. They're at that point.
Yeah.
And they've quit every time in their life for the last, they've literally quit every day.
Yeah.
For the last 10, 20 years. And so each day I'm saying, okay, this is the beginning of the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You got to make that decision again. And it wears you down. It absolutely wears you down. And a lot of, they don't stick with therapy and they don't have support from their family, a lot of them are going to fail. It's a new disorder. I mean, the therapy is, there's lots of different beliefs of how to treat this. And there's a lot of different ways. I mean, like, Dr. Green treats this totally different than anyone else in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Pfeffer treats this totally different than anyone in the country. He's actually got he treats it as OCD, and he actually treats it with, what's that group? Second City out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He's created a, what are the, what kind of comedy they do?
Like improv?
Improv. They have, like, improv therapy.
Hmm.
And it treats them to, like, talk to people. And the way good improv is coached is that you have to actually, you're not focused on yourself. You're just focused on making the other person look good.
Yeah.
And his improv coaching through OCD, like, therapy, helps these people to get rid of these social anxieties. And then the stuff doesn't matter anymore. It's actually, that's a whole other podcast. Fascinating guy. But there's a lot of new, interesting therapies coming out. And luckily, hoarding is still such a brand new thing. You know, it's kind of in its infancy as far as how to treat it, that a lot of new things are being happening. I think in 10 years, we'll all just be like, okay, this is how you treat it.
Yeah.
Make a deal.
And
here's the answer. You go to this kind of rehab. But right now, it's kind of Wild Wild West. And so I love it. I'm fascinated by it. To get into these hoarders' brains is amazing. And I think my personality fits really well because they trust me and they share a lot more with me than they do with most people. Because they also know I'm not going to judge them. They know that I've been at my rock bottom is as low as theirs or even worse.
Well, whenever you started, though, was it in this extreme cleaning or was it because you know how your name is the Clutter Cleaner on Twitter and stuff? So, like, I always think of clutter cleaning as more like organizing, like label maker situation. But
yeah, I used that word specific. I chose Clutter Cleaner. The first name of my business was called Attic Attack.
Okay.
And then I realized that people would only think I cleaned attics. So I changed my name to Clutter Cleaner pretty quick. My buddies and I had a couple beers one night and we came up with that name.
I like it.
And from our marketing perspective, I always like things to rhyme.
Okay.
It has to be fun to say. And so for me, I mean, I was living on a buddy's couch. I knew what I really dug was cleaning old ladies' garages and attics. I really enjoyed.
That's unusual.
Yeah, I just love old ladies. They're cool. They're really good stories.
That's a real niche market.
Stuff. There's a big movement of business called senior move managers, which is, that's just what they do. They move old ladies. And I didn't know that when I started my business. And I was competing against these, like, really professional women. And I couldn't understand why I wasn't getting business from all these nursing homes. And I spent, like, 3 months trying to get business. And the guy's like, dude, there's someone in town that does it so good, we're never going to leave them. And I was like, I will move one of your ladies for free.
Right.
He was like, we're good, man.
Now you're,
like,
no!
We'd rather pay someone else than use you for free.
That's
so I was like, who is this lady? So I went to that lady, and I was like, what do you not do? And she was like, I don't do the hoarding. And I was like, I do.
Yeah.
Can I do the hoarding
for
you?
That's what I do.
And that's literally, it was just a business decision. I was like, well, I'm never going to beat this woman, and you can't win in a price comparison. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to do whatever she doesn't do.
That lady,
still to this day, that lady does all of our moves, and I still have a business that runs. You know, we still run Clutter Cleaner,
and she has like a freaking monopoly.
She does, and there's a lady in every town that does.
Wow,
they're amazing, and so like they're really good at what they do, and they're the kind of person you want helping your grandma.
Yeah,
when it's time to downsize, but they bring us in. We still work with those types of people all over the country, doing the worst of the worst, and so Clutter Cleaner stuck just because it's, you know, you'd rather hire Clutter Cleaner than CleanMyShitUp.com, you know?
Well, like, I wouldn't, but most people would.
Most people don't want someone like, I mean, I clean up poop. That's what I do. I mean, we do a lot of the crime scene too, so we clean up a lot of dead bodies. We clean
up
a lot of...
My Lord, Matt. No wonder you're in therapy.
Well, you know, we want to do what nobody else does. I mean, and so price doesn't come into it when you're cleaning up brains or something. Like, people aren't gonna fight with you on price.
Come on.
They don't
want
to do it.
Well,
and we're making a real difference. We're making a real difference in people's lives.
I know. It is lovely, but that's...
Oh, I love it.
Well, before I forget, since you were talking about poop, we have to promote the Golden Poop.
Yes.
Tell the people about this beautiful thing.
Golden Poop is our holiday ornament. It's the official poop holiday ornament of the year. You can get it at cluttercleaner.com. I think, Susie, you have one to give away, right?
Yes,
one
I do. Yes.
Okay, and we'll... Let's increase that to two. I will mail another one out. I don't know what the contest will be. You can tell.
Well,
that, but...
I want people to tweet me, the first person to tweet me, and I wanted to ask you what they should say. But since you, I wanted it to be something obviously about Golden Poop, but since you like rhyming, couldn't it be like Matt Scat or something?
I say let the listener be creative. We want it.
Yes.
We want just hashtag Golden Poop.
Yes.
Got to be. What's your Twitter handle?
Susie_Meister.
Okay. Susie_Meister, and I'm at Clutter Cleaner.
Yeah.
But the key is hashtag Golden Poop, and I would say something has to rhyme with Susie Meister.
But I don't think that's asking too much.
No, and be creative.
But people need to buy these things because what says Christmas more than poop?
Well, here's the thing. This is my angle, and I think you're right.
This
nothing
is my
says
angle.
Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa more than the official holiday Golden Poop. I had a guy the other day that tweeted me a picture of his hanging off menorah, and I was like, this is the thing I've ever seen in my life. I was so proud, man. I was so proud. And
well, maybe because it represents hope, Matt.
I like that.
Thanks.
I like that.
Thank you.
I like that. I don't think it smelled well in the manger that first night. I think we could go with that. There's a lot of animals. I don't know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think they rode through the desert that night.
Poop happens.
You know, it does. For us, poop is just become a symbol of what we do, and so we thought we'd have fun with it. And I'm not gonna lie, we ordered a few too many. We still have quite a surplus of Golden Poops, and so we're trying to have fun with it.
All right.
So,
well, I want people to buy them, so we'll see what we can do.
Buy them at cluttercleaner.com. You'll see that they'll see a big Golden Poop. Just click on it, and you can buy it for $14.95. If they want it free shipping, they just have to enter the words of the letters 5DA.
Yes, I took advantage of that. I'm a big fan of coupon codes. And thank you, Matt. Okay, wait. So you know how I have, as you know, from Facebook, because we're Facebook friends, I have friends that are kind of like hoarder obsessed because they're always trying to talk to you about it. And I sent my friend Oliver an email yesterday saying, do you have any questions for Matt? And within 2 minutes, he sent back like 50 questions. But I think he made a good point when he asked about the smell of the houses. Because I think it's difficult to convey probably what you're dealing with.
If you're dealing with the overwhelming smell, believe it or not, will be if there's cats in the house, that's the winning smell. Like
it trumps all other smells.
Everything. I mean, there have been houses, and there was a house in Vegas that had a dead body in there.
Oh, wow.
And you couldn't smell it.
Come on!
Of all the cat pee. Yeah, of all the cat pee. You couldn't smell it. They sent a police cadaver dog, and the cadaver dogs, which are trained to find dead people, could not find that body because of the methane. One time, I had a garage that was full of cats, and I went to pick up this black and white cat, and you can see where I'm going here. I picked it up by the tail. And it was a fucking skunk. And I got sprayed, totally sprayed, of about a foot away from a skunk. And we all looked at each other like, oh, my God. And we never smelled it.
No.
There was so much cat piss.
I think that does a good job at describing the intensity of it. And, like, on top of that, Oliver was wondering, why is it always cats?
Great question. It comes down to easy love. Cats, it comes back to that first question of self-worth. Like, you want to feel better. These hoarders need to feel good about themselves. They need that love. And a cat will come up and nuzzle you and give you a quick fix. It's actually like heroin. I mean, cats are like heroin for hoarders. They get that quick fix, and then the cat goes away. And it doesn't require a lot of uptake. If you don't care about the cat poop being around the house and the litter box, then literally all you got to do for a cat is feed it. Like, you can throw
That's
food
a good
out
point,
once every couple
if
of days.
You don't care about that poop.
But like a dog would drive you crazy. Okay. Like you couldn't. No good hoarder is gonna have a dog because they're not gonna. The dog requires so much more work for the amount of love that a dog gives back, and a cat will totally just give you any type of love for free. The cat's like a whore in the animal way, you know.
Yes.
And so they'll just come in and give you the love and walk away, and that fits the hoarder's need. They need that love. And what happens with the cats is people always wonder how do they have 30 cats?
Wow.
Like, what happened with one? Well, eventually cats replace people. And the more family that they lose, they just bring in more cats. And that's why you see them, like, it's so sad. And that's why you see them talking to cats, like, in a baby voice.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they absolutely are their kids. Like, that's the only family they have. It's really tragic. And then I always have to walk in and be like, yeah, they all have to be put down because they're all
rich. Yeah, and bad
like,
news.
Or literally, I'll be like, you can keep one.
You know how you love your family of cats? Yeah, you can't keep them. Well, so the weird, like when people come up to me and want to talk about the real world road rule stuff, they have this impression that it's really fun because the way it's edited, it looks, you know, we live in this beautiful house and, you know, I guess, you know, there's a pool. I don't know. People think that it looks super fun and it's not. But whenever people watch your show, I don't think they get that same impression for you. So like when people come up to you, what are they saying? Like, are they sympathetic towards you? Are they like, why are you doing this?
A lot of people are like, why you do this? Man? Like, why on earth would you do this? Like, I tell you, I have the best job in the world. Like, I get paid, quite honestly, a good amount of money to help people.
Well, that's nice.
Like, and I'm naturally, I'm a very needy person. Like, I need constant attention, and I get that with a hoarder. Like, I've helped them save their lives, so the hoarder thanks me forever.
You're like a god.
Yeah, to them. I mean, I hate that word, but yeah, I mean, it fits what I need to help people, and I need to feel needed. And my wife cares less about telling me that I'm needed. So, like, the hoarders, it's a really good, my wife's raising her kids. She doesn't have time to worry about me. So, she's booked. I mean, she's booked for the next 18 years, so it fits my needs. But once you kind of give in to helping people, like when you just care about making money, you can't help it. Like we naturally get out of college and we think about making money. We're gonna make money. Buy for my family. But once you give in to helping people, like the self worth that you get from helping people, you can't go back to just making money. I mean, like hoarders will be over soon. It's a TV show. TV shows don't last forever. That's just normal. And like I don't know what I'm gonna do when hoarders is over. I mean, I still have all my businesses. I love my podcasting and. I have a lot, actually.
But you have the bug now.
I have the bug. I have like five other podcasts that I host. I love podcasting.
How irritated is your wife at like when people want to talk to you about the show?
She hates it.
Yeah.
She absolutely, my wife hates it. I'm sure you get the same thing from your husband. Like, the my wife, when I met my wife, I was a bum, literally living on a buddy's couch. And we met at a grief camp called Comfort Zone Camp. And it's a grant camp for kids that have lost their parents. And we both were volunteers. And I had lost my dad. I mean, my trigger for all my negative behaviors are when my dad died. I went on like a 2-year bender.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I literally, like, I just traveled the world just getting hammered. I basically did Road Rules, like, by myself.
Right.
With no camera.
That's worse.
Yeah, it was bad. And I spent like 30 grand on my credit cards. I mean, I just went crazy.
God.
And so my wife knew me, like, at my rock bottom.
Yeah.
She saw just this pure potential.
Yes.
So that's the person she still sees. She
and
doesn't
she's
know
a fox, too.
She's a hottie.
You got a good one.
I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
I got very lucky. And, she's an amazing mom. She's an amazing wife. But, like, she's not, like, I'm not famous. Like, I'm just regular dude for her. And so she hates when, like, people want to come up and talk. And now people come up and they're like, I love your podcast, man. And that's when she really loses it. She can't stand my podcast. She thinks my podcast is, like, just crude.
No.
And she doesn't dig it. And so it's funny. She doesn't watch the show. It's not fair to her to see all the stuff that I go through on Hoarders.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I get home, I just need to be.
Yep. Totally. Well,
so, like, I really, like, we go out of our way for her. She's never read my book. She's listened to my podcast once since she was on it. And she hasn't watched the show in, like, 3 seasons.
Well, so I have this thing that I have to do now. I don't know if you know her. My friend Sarah from The Real World Brooklyn, she was one of my first guests, and we started talking about what was in the trunk of our cars. And she said her theory is that you can tell a lot about a person from what's in their trunk. So I ask all my guests.
What kind of junk do you have in your trunk?
Yeah, what's in your trunk? So you have to tell us.
My trunk right now, it's almost empty. I have.
It's almost empty.
Yeah, I'm a minimalist, man. Like, I have nothing.
Okay, that's like, telling.
I have a cooler in the back that carries my juice because I'm on a juice diet.
Oh, God,
and
you aren't.
And I'm trying to lose weight. Yeah, I love it.
You're trying to lose weight?
Yeah, I've actually gotten really big. I'm gaining like 30 pounds, this year. So I'm big. My wife, we've had 2 kids, and my wife is actually 10 pounds lighter than we met.
Oh, my God.
And I am 35 pounds heavier than we met.
Wow. All right, so you're on a juice diet, so you got
a
refrigerator.
A juice diet. So that's still,
so
I always keep my... Yeah, and then it's like a little, like one of those, plastic carry ones, pretty small. 2 pair of shoes, a nice pair of sneakers, and a nice pair of dress shoes in case I have to.
No.
I don't know. Yeah, you never know.
Just
and then I have a box of trash bags because we have to go clean up a house tomorrow.
and
that's it. You never know. When
I love it. Yeah, you never know when you might find a pile of adult diapers.
And then I have, I guess, there's like a respirator for breathing. So in case I feel like going to the house, it's really dangerous.
Wow. I don't think these items will be in anyone else's trunk, Matt.
No. And I have 2 baby feet in the back seat. In the back seat. Now, this is what I've changed it. That trunk is clean because that's my area.
Yeah.
The back seat is my kids' area. So I have 2 baby seats.
And there's just like Cheerios stuck everywhere.
Cheerios and orange slices and lollipop sticks everywhere.
Oh, Lord.
My sons are addicted to lollipops. So they're, there must be those sticks, like, after they're finished the lollipop, they just toss them down. And then a ton of toys. The middle seat of my car is disgusting.
That is so gross. Disgusting. I love it.
Kids can destroy a car.
I know. I'm not excited about it.
And can I ask you questions?
Yeah.
I know your format.
Yeah, what do you got?
I am very, because I was, I literally in love with you. Because you were, like,
that makes me so happy.
Well, you were the first person on TV that was hot and was also open about their faith.
So,
like, I really struggled with that. I told Tom this. I don't know, did Tom Segura ever tell you this?
No, he did not.
We were at a Virginia Beach Funny Bone, and I was interviewing. He was doing my podcast, so I drove like in the middle of the night to catch him at like 1 o'clock in the morning after he was on stage. And Jay Moore had cooked. He's like, this guy Segura is hilarious.
Yeah,
I never even heard Segura, right? So I go and catch his act, and he was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious. At this point in time, all I know is he's a friend of Jay Moore's. That's all I know.
Right.
No relation to you and your best friend, right? And so we're set up. We're having a couple beers. We're talking. And he mentions that he knows you. And I was like, wait a minute.
Oh, wait, hold everything.
I was like, time out. I was like, the blonde girl? And he's like, yeah. And keep in mind, I'm about 3 beers in at this point. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I love it. Like, you were like my first TV crush, right? And he's like, why? And I was like, what's this weird thing between like faith and being hot? Like, I never really seen that before, and I think it was a real struggle. And then we get into like a masturbation discussion, not about you, by the way, just in general. And he's calling his wife to tell his wife the story, and then like it got so awkward. He was just like, "Yeah, I think we're done, man. This is really weird." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Dude, I know Susie really well. Like, she's my wife's best friend." I was like, "What?" I was like, "You started this, man, you know?" And it was like, I was like, "You should have told me that from the beginning, dude. Like, that's not
fair." Yeah, he bait and switched you. That ain't right.
Oh, totally. And but the problem was I went so far right that it was, like, awkward for everybody. So we basically just, like, scratched and started over. And I had to delete the entire thing off the podcast because when I re-listened to it, it was so awkward. I literally had to cut out, like, 20 minutes of my podcast.
Well, back in the day when they cast me, the MTV was still doing, like, different personalities. So I felt like I was kind of like the token, naive, virginal, Christian, you know, girl. And now they don't have those kinds of people.
No.
They tend to have, like, one person, the partier.
Yeah, they just have whore. They have a blonde whore and a brunette whore and a black whore, and that's it. Was that legit? I mean, did you really have to struggle with your faith a lot? I mean, that must have been awful.
Yeah. I mean, I was 18. I had never even left home. I had never, you know, gone anywhere. And here I was in Australia filming a, you know, reality show for MTV. And I really was, like, virginal, Christian, just really trying to stay the straight and narrow. That was true.
Well, I remember, I mean, I actually tried out for Road Rules. I sent in a tape.
I
had my roommate in college, and, like, we taped it, and it was, like, a big VHS tape and mailed it in, you know, and it was, like, awful. And because I wanted to be on Road Rules. And, didn't want to be on Real World.
No.
I don't know if it was your season or not that made me want to do that. It would have been 1994.
Oh, no. I was 1998.
Okay, so it was later. So it was 94. 95 would have been 95 my senior year. So, I mean, I really thought it was amazing. And now, it's so funny when you watch it, you're like, oh, my God, that would be the worst 4 weeks of my life. You know?
Well, when I watch it now, I can't believe it got put on because it's, like, kind of boring in comparison to what's on now. You know, we just kind of...
Yeah, but it was. At the time, it was...
It was
groundbreaking. Yeah. I mean, I remember the first Real World, like, blew my mind. Like,
I know.
I was in that Julie, or not Julie, whatever the dancer was.
Yeah, like, Julie.
Oh, she was amazing.
She was something,
like,
huh?
Oh, my God. Well, she was like, that's a regular woman that's beautiful, that's, like, not
and
a
doesn't
star,
know it.
You know?
Like, she doesn't act like...
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
They don't
do you ever get... Do you ever get people that, like, how can I say this better? Like, for me, faith is still a massive... I think, and it's... I sure... It sure doesn't sound like it, but faith is still a massive part of my life.
Yeah.
And it's... I'm assuming it is for you, too. And especially now we have kids now. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I want to make sure my kids have this faith, like, structure in their life, like I did. Like, did you get hit with a lot of kids on the positive side of that faith, like, after the show aired? Or, like, how did that, what
yeah,
happened,
like,
after
the people,
it aired?
So we didn't have Twitter and stuff like that, but people would write letters, like, actual letters. And
they're cool
I
letters.
Still have
God,
them. Yeah, and I would read them. And they actually mean more to me than the kind of things you get now, because it's so easy to contact celebrities and whatever now. But these letters, like, people would send them to MTV, and then they'd have to send them to me. And most of them were like that, like, oh, you're an inspiration or whatever. And now it's weird, though, because after I've done so many seasons and I don't put up with crap from people, now I have a different image and people think I'm horrible. But after that first season, people, you know, thought I was really sweet and nice. And that's what they would say.
Well, you're still, in my mind, you're still.
Thanks, Maddie P.
I fell in love with.
I try. I know.
I tried to explain it to my wife. My wife's like 7 years younger than me, so she never saw any of that stuff. So I was trying to explain it to her this morning. I was like, I'm going on this podcast. I'm really excited. You know, and she was just, I was trying to explain to her, you were, and she's like, yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, but
we'd
really have to make her care, because I feel like I want to be friends with her, so we got to make it happen. Like,
done.
So
we are traveling, like,
double date.
We are literally traveling all next year.
Oh,
like,
are you?
All next year. We're trying to get away. Yeah, we're working on a couple of new shows, so I'm hoping. I think one just got bought. I don't know, but
fingers crossed.
We're excited to kind of just hit the road, and the kids. This is like the last time where the kids are young enough.
You can do
it. They don't have the commitment, so I've pretty much convinced
her.
Oh
my God! wish.
Hit the Winnebago, and I start on the Home Shopping Network in January. I have a line of cleaning products coming out.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, I'm excited. They're really good, all natural, very effective cleaning products. So I can use them in the houses that I clean at work, and I can use them at home if they're still so safe.
That's genius.
I was having to wash. Like, I couldn't bring any of my cleaning products in my car.
Yeah.
I had to have a separate car at work because the chemicals needed to clean the houses we were cleaning were so bad that I couldn't let them get near my kids.
Wow.
So I was having to, like, leave all my boots and all my clothes, and I was like, this is ridiculous. And then I couldn't even, like, all the cleaning products, like, under our sink were so dangerous. It's the only thing we left locked up in our house. Like, we didn't even lock up the liquor cabinet. We just locked up the cleaning products because they were so dangerous for the
kids.
And I'm like,
this
isn't right. Man, there needs to be, like, something safe. So we've been building that for the last year, and then they've got a really nice partner. And they're putting us on HSN. I'm excited. So hopefully I'll rock with that.
Matt, I can't thank you enough for coming on.
Thank you for having me, man.
You're my absolute fave, and I'm just so glad that we can meet, even if it's just electronically.
We will meet families and kids together.
Yeah.
It'll be awesome. We'll do a picnic.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Matt Paxton. It has been so much fun talking. You guys can find more about Matt at cluttercleaner.com. He has a podcast also called 5 Decisions Away. And don't forget to tweet us. It's @cluttercleaner or @Susie_Meister with the #GoldenPoop if you want one of those ornaments. And, of course, you can find Matt Paxton on A&E's Hoarders. See you next time, everybody.